Hi, and welcome to What the Phalange, the podcast where we watch every episode of Friends, discuss it, deconstruct it, and fan over it, one episode at a time, sometimes twice, when you realize that you weren't recording the first time.
My name is Emily, pronouns she and her.
And my name is Quinn, pronouns they and them. This week, we're talking about Season 2, Episode 20, the one where Old Yeller dies.
You know, I'm realizing that you get all the good parts of this intro, always. This episode aired on April 4th, 1996. It was written by Michael Curtis, Gregory S. Malins, and Adam Chase, and it was directed by Michael Lembeck.
According to IMDb, this is the episode where Phoebe's worldview is shattered when she learns that how old Yeller really ends. Monica becomes jealous when Richard starts hanging out with Chandler and Joey, and Rachel panics when she learns that Ross has planned their entire whole life to every last frickin' tax dollar. So we're going to do things a little differently.
Hi, Quinn.
Oh, hi.
We didn't do that last time.
You haven't noticed yet? We started recording and then it wasn't recording. So we're doing this twice.
Yeah. Anyways, so we are doing things a little bit different this time. We have decided that we, instead of going through every single scene and kind of talking about our feels about every single scene, we're going to start by summarizing the episode and then talk about like big themes throughout the episode. So this is kind of our way of switching things up a little bit and also giving us space to go into more detail about themes rather than just like concentrating on individual scenes, some of which are like less relevant and less entertaining. But let us know how you feel.
Yeah, we're trying this out. So I think this warning is just this, you know, we're doing this because we're like, hey, this will give us so much more space to talk about like feelings and thoughts and feelings. But we might just not know what we're doing the entire episode because we have no more structure. And then, you know, sometimes when you move away from structure, you flail like a lost chicken.
Like Quinn is doing right now.
Hey, I'm totally fine with how I sound right now, okay?
Okay, Quinn, so tell me how you feel about this episode.
Last time I asked you first. I always ask you first.
Okay, ask me first.
There's a reason I ask you.
Okay, I'll tell you about how I feel then.
Okay, cool.
Okay, I think that the title of this episode always makes me forget what this episode is about.
Yeah.
Like, I think that the title of the episode is basically the, like, C storyline. Like, it's, like, the least interesting part of the storyline.
Interesting. Not even a B storyline.
No, well, because there are C story, like there's three storylines, right? Yeah. Which I'll summarize in a second. But I think like this episode, when I think of the title of it, I don't remember what actually happens in this episode. And I think there's like a lot of big feelings that happen in this episode. And a lot of them are very real feelings, like Monica dealing with her partner, having like being friends with her friends and how she kind of deals with that toxic positivity that Phoebe has to deal with, like her mom shielding her from hard feelings as a kid, Ross and like his difficulties of not being a primary caregiver, intergenerational relationships, and Rachel and Ross like planning their future and like communication in relationships. So those are like big themes that I want to talk about. And there's like a lot of feelings that I have about this episode, and I'm looking forward to talking about feelings.
I really want to just talk about the taxes in Scarsdale and why they're more expensive.
Yeah, sure.
I'm just kidding. I don't really want to talk about that.
How do you feel about this episode?
I find that there's like, a lot of relatable feels in here. I think that I really like the theme of kind of like child rearing that they kind of play with here. You know, like you have like Ben as a baby in this episode, and then we're also exploring like Phoebe's childhood in this episode and sort of drawing like a parallel, especially when you start like looking at how Phoebe had one mom who was like struggling to take care of herself. Mm-hmm. And then you have like Ben who has like all of these caregivers that are just like gathering around him and so excited. I think that that's like an interesting kind of
juxtaposition.
Yeah, that they kind of played out here. They wrote in. And yeah, I mean, like you brought up a lot of the points that I think will be great to explore in this episode. Yeah. I think that, yeah, I'm into this. Sorry. Yeah, I mean, like, you brought up a lot of the things that I want to talk about, especially, like, lately I've been reading a lot about, like, I guess, like, in a sense, like, toxic positivity, but also, like, emotional agility and emotion, like, how to actually, like, have resilience emotionally and manage trauma, and it
not
was
just shove everything down and pretend it doesn't exist.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just really interesting because, like, then watching this episode and seeing how Phoebe's mom tried to, like, navigate and, like, teach Phoebe around the world, which was really just, like, shielding her from any possible, like, harm or bad feelings. And I've been learning that that's, like, really just not the way that we should be dealing with things.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, why don't you summarize the episode and we can get into more details about these themes that we want to talk about.
Okay, cool. So I'm going to summarize, and please keep in mind that this is the first time I'm doing a larger summary of an entire episode.
Yeah, so I don't even know what this summary is going to be. So I'm going to critique you after.
Yeah, I'm sure. Feel free to interrupt me at any point with your feelings. Okay, so.
Okay, well, I'm feeling like.
The episode starts. I'm going to interrupt you. The episode starts with Phoebe walking into Monica and Rachel's apartment. Monica, Richard, Rachel, and Ross are all watching Old Yeller. And Phoebe's kind of thrown off because she's never seen the end of the movie before. She doesn't really understand the scene that's playing out. The scene that is playing out is that Old Yeller gets shot. I've never actually seen Old Yeller, so I can't attest to this scene, but apparently it happens. And then the episode kind of explores Phoebe realizing that her mom used to turn off all sad movies before the end to shield her from all the sad parts of movies. And throughout the episode, she kind of starts to watch different movies, and you get these, like, moments where she's talking about different sad scenes from specific movies, like E.T. going home and, like, Rocky losing and Charlotte from Charlotte's Web dying.
Oh my god, so tragic. I remember being a kid reading that and being like, what?
Yeah. I've never actually read Charlotte's Web.
But oh, it's such a good book. We should reread it together.
That's funny. Yeah, and then basically Monica finishes by telling her to watch the movie It's a Wonderful Life. Phoebe turns it off before the end herself because it just gets really, really sad, which I want to talk about It's a Wonderful Life because I actually think it's a really sad movie and has a sad ending. So I don't actually think that I agree with Phoebe when she says it's a sucky life and just when you think it can't suck anymore, it does. So that's kind of how that storyline ends.
I've never seen It's a Wonderful Life.
Okay. Well,
Every year I'm like, I should watch this. And then I'm like, meh.
It's kind of about how capitalism
works. I'll watch The Princess Switch instead.
Oh my god, classic. 1, 2, or 3.
All of them.
Cool. So the other storyline that's going on at the same time. So after the credits roll, Chandler and Joey are basically trying to figure out who to bring to the Knicks game. They have an extra ticket. Usually they bring Ross. Somehow or other, they can afford to get hockey tickets and basketball tickets very frequently when they make little to no money. And Monica suggests that they invite Richard, but they don't really want to because they say he's old. Older than some buildings, or younger than some.
He's older than some people and younger than some buildings.
But they
end up save Chandler. Good save.
They end up inviting him and they have like a great time, but almost like too great a time to the point where like Joey and Chandler start awkwardly admiring Richard in this like weird way. And they like basically end up kind of seeing him as more as a dad than a friend, and that throws Richard off when he finds that out. I think Richard was starting to see them as like buds and friends, and then he starts feeling kind of like awkward by the fact that they actually the entire time were just thinking of him as a dad. Meanwhile, at the same time, Monica is navigating her own feelings around the fact that her partner is hanging out with all the guys. Quinn is giving me a really weird look right now, so I'm like feeling overwhelmed.
I'm like picturing the movie, the episode as you talk about it. And okay. I'm like, I'm also like resisting piping in and being like, oh yeah, I can't wait to talk about Monica's like self-awareness at this point.
But pipe in, that's the point. It's fun. So yeah, Monica's navigating her feelings around Richard hanging out with the guys more than her because he doesn't really have that much time to spend with her. And she's like trying to figure out how to deal with that. I'm not really getting any support from her other friends because they're all dealing with their own shit. And then like
that's a great scene.
That storyline kind of ends by like Richard basically finding out that they see him more as a dad and Monica basically not having to
deal with it at all. It's like, oh, well, that's over.
Yeah, it's kind of like pro for her, but con in the sense that like she will have to deal with that, I'm sure, again in the future. And therefore, like not actually having that conversation with Richard means mm-hmm. that she hasn't dealt with it. But meanwhile, while Monica is not communicating her feelings to her partner, Ross and Rachel are hella communicating their feelings to each other.
Mm.
So this is the final storyline of the episode.
Ross is oversharing.
I love this. Okay. So the storyline with Ross basically starts with Ross taking care of Ben in his own apartment. Carol and Susan come to pick him up. And it becomes really clear that Ross basically keeps missing big things that happen in Ben's life. So he, like, shares the fact that Ben put his hands on something and pulled himself up. And he was, like, so excited. He took a video. He wanted to tell Carol and Susan that, like, it was the first time that Ben's ever done that. But it turns out it's not the first time Ben's done that. He's done it before. And Carol and Susan just kind of have this, like, heartbreaking look on their face, more Carol than Susan, about, like, the fact that, like, Ross is kind of missing these things. And Ross is starting to feel really sad, so he wants to start hanging out with Ben more.
You can tell that Emily, like, really feels this storyline so much because she's going into, like, so much more detail about it. Like, I'm going to describe you the facial expressions on their faces every step of the way.
But it's, like, okay, there's a lot of feels in this storyline. Okay.
Yeah, I know. Secondary caregiver.
And like at the same time, it's like in this scene, so Ross basically asks to have Ben more often, and we basically just have no idea what their custody agreement is. Like it's kind of like we have no idea. Like he's like, yeah. I want to see Ben for more than just a day. It's like, well, what is your agreement? Like, what are you allowed to see him for? But anyways, and so
it's also like not I wouldn't phrase it as like allowed to see him for, but it's like
yeah.
what has been agreed on, like, what's the system?
Yeah.
Because that's also usually based off of him as well, right?
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Yeah.
And so then Ross basically is taking care of Ben more. Ross brings Ben to the coffee shop where Rachel is working. They end up having this awkward exchange where Ross has clearly just, like, planned his entire life with Rachel, and Rachel, like, has a panic and, like, leaves the coffee shop. And they end up having a fight, basically, about how Rachel doesn't want to have her whole life planned, and Ross wants to plan everything. He's already imagined their entire life together and their entire future together. It's very overwhelming for Rachel. And their fight basically results in them saying, I love you to each other for the first time. And just like kind of accepting that they want two different things right now, or they're like looking towards their future in two different ways right now. But like it's fine and it works for them in this moment. And then Ross basically is showing Rachel how to change Ben's diaper. That's what I wrote. But and in doing so, while Ross is out of the room, Rachel witnesses Ben's first word. And again, Ross is sad
Hi.
Something about hi.
It's more like hi, which is not what it sounded like.
And then Ross is just sad that he again misses something from his child. And it's like, yeah. And then Carol and Susan show up. And then as they're taking Ben away, Ben says bye. And he says bye to Ross. And we get this like heart melting scene where Ross is just like so happy that Ben is saying bye to him. He says it like over and over and over again. And I wrote, Ross's heart melts and so do all of ours.
Okay.
And that's the episode. All right. Thanks for listening.
See you next week. That's what feels like is like the natural thing. Like as though we just like did this episode on like high speed or something.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. Now we're going to start talking about our feelings.
Yeah, let's do it.
I'm wearing my shirt inside out.
Okay. I vote that we start talking about Phoebe not watching movie endings first. Because okay. I feel like I have the least amount of feelings about this.
The least amount of feelings? When she's having so many feelings.
She's having so many feelings.
I feel for her. I'm just like, oh. Yo, also, just want to point out that the reason why you never saw Old Yeller is because mom would
used
not
to shield us from yeah. sad endings of movies.
Yeah, she wouldn't let us watch Old Yeller.
Yeah, that's so true. Mom hated movies that didn't have sad endings.
No. Not past tense.
Hates.
Our mother will not watch a movie without a happy ending.
Basically, you can know if a movie has a sad ending by asking my mom, hey, mom, did you watch this movie? Did you like it? If she says, yeah, I loved it, you can know 100% it has a happy ending.
Yeah.
If it has a sad ending, she will not like the movie.
Yeah. You know my mom, yeah, her rating scale is really just on how happy the ending is.
That used to be my rating scale, but lately I've really been embracing sad endings in movies.
Or just redefining what a happy ending is.
It's true. It's true. It's like about growth and change and not necessarily the guy and the girl in their super toxic hetero relationship ending up together.
Oh my god, he did one nice thing.
He ran to the airport for me.
He said he's gonna change.
but showed absolutely no indication that he will actually change.
He pretended to care. Oh, the bar, it's so high.
Moving on. Yeah, okay, you said you haven't seen It's a Wonderful Life?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
I haven't seen a lot of the movies that Jimmy. I probably have seen the Bert and Ernie episode at the end of the show, but
I didn't mention that one.
But yeah, I haven't seen a lot of them. I think part of it, I mean, they're kind of older movies, right? But I do know that a lot of them, like when we were in the 90s, we were younger and our mom definitely shielded us from.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
From sad endings. But I guess what's interesting about this is just like, I don't know. It's. You know, when you are dealing with so much pain, I think it's like pretty natural to also like want to watch happy movies.
Yeah.
And so I could also understand if Phoebe's mom was kind of also doing it, because usually when your kid is watching a movie, you are in the same vicinity.
That's true.
But it's obvious that it was more than that, because she straight up was lying to Phoebe about it, like verbally lying. But
yeah, well, we do have this scene with like Phoebe where she like comes in after like we're basically into the coffee shop and she's like really upset and she says like, you know, turns out my mom used to turn off the movies before the end. She did it to shield us from the pain and suffering, you know, before she killed herself. Like this very like clearly resentful frustration or like anger at her mom for like this kind of betrayal. And I realized like we never really get to explore Phoebe's entire life. Like, Phoebe needs to go to therapy. And, like, I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean that in a good way. Like, in the sense that, like, I feel like 15 years ago when you say to someone, like, you need to go to therapy, it's like an insult. Now it's like, you need to heal yourself so we can continue to be friends.
Was it in a past episode or that we've already covered where Rachel's like, how have you never been on Oprah?
Yeah, I think that's the beginning of season two. Yeah,
okay. Or I feel like that's like the equivalent of like, you know, like the 90s being like, you should be an Oprah is like the equivalent of like now being like, oh yeah, you should definitely go see this therapist that I love. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, it's pretty intense that she like, she did do this. She kind of was trying to aim for this toxic positivity of like, not having to talk about feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And like,
I don't know if I want to call it like, directly toxic positivity, but kind of like,
mm-hmm.
like, I definitely think it's in line with a lot of toxic positivity that exists out there. Like, you know, this idea of just having to be like, oh, like positive only let like the good things into your life. And like, but like, suppress essentially and like turn away from anything that's like bad,
yeah,
quote okay. unquote bad,
hashtag good vibes only sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, I'm going to leave like a TED talk down in the podcast notes.
Show notes.
You can go take a look at, but the author of Emotional Agility is Susan. Oh my goodness. Her name is Susan David, I think. PhD, and she does a lot of research on like emotional agility, essentially. It's like she's kind of coined the terms from what I understand, as opposed to emotional rigidity or emotional fragility, essentially. And just kind of exploring the common denominators between people being emotionally fragile versus being more basically resilient and how to like navigate through the world. She has her own very like interesting personal story of like her dad dying from cancer when she was 15. And the TED talk doesn't actually go fully into it. I listened to an interview with her recently and it's like very heartbreaking. Like her dad was also, like, right before he passed when she was 15, he also, like, he had life insurance, and there were some people in his community that told him that he was dying because he didn't have faith in God. And so he, in order to try to, like, as, like, a last, like, he was scared, and so he got rid of his life insurance right before, like, months before he died in order to, like, try to prove to God that he had faith in God. Yeah. So it's, like, an epically devastating story where he, like, left his whole family, like, after, like, a very long, drawn-out death, and then left his family.
With no money.
And with, like, three kids with, like, no money and just, like, anyway, she talks a lot about, like, how that's, like, very central to, like, how, I guess, like, what led her to do her work.
Right.
And how, like, she started off with just, like, trying to suppress her emotions as a 15-year-old, obviously.
Hey, Quinn, does this feel like maybe a book that we should read?
Definitely.
In a book club?
On a side note, we might start a book club.
But we're not allowed to say things because we never actually follow through with them. But we're thinking of starting a summer book club between season 2 and season 3. But we'll get back to you. Don't think too much about it.
But anyway, so I guess it's interesting though, because what she was saying is that in this interview she was doing with Brené Brown, by the way, another interesting person when it comes to emotional resiliency. But she was talking about how, like, if you take a piece of paper and on one side you write down how you're feeling, like, especially when it comes to, like, your feelings that are not good, like, mm-hmm. like that you don't want to have, like, let's say, like, you're feeling jealous or you're feeling overwhelmed or you're hurt or you're sad. And then when you're instructed to, like, turn over and be like, okay, now write down everything that you're grateful for and try to forget about the other side, you know, and just focus in on that. Apparently in research, people actually ended up being, like, more emotionally fragile after doing that exercise, as opposed to when you write down the hurt feelings and explore them. And essentially, like, the more we try to push away the hurt feelings, the bigger that they will get and the more likely they will overpower us, essentially.
Yeah, I think, like, I think just being in the yoga community, like, there's a lot of, and, like, the wellness community, a lot with, like, there's a lot of this, like, don't focus on the bad things, like, let light into your heart, like, talk about the good, like, if you focus on the bad, then things will continue to be bad, and, like, positive energy can heal. And, like, I do think that there is something to be said about, like, positive thoughts and positive energy and things like that. Like, I don't think that is
inherent. And it has been shown that, like, a gratitude practice does help.
Yeah.
But the point is that, like, when you start taking a gratitude practice to suppress and try to push away, like, the actual feelings that you're feeling, that's when it starts to become, like, you're actually doing the opposite of what your goal was in the first place, which was to try to create more space for wellness, essentially, in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, like, I would love for us to, like, we are moving towards a, you know, a world in which we have normalized therapy and we have normalized talking about feelings. And, like, I think that, you know, sometimes we need to talk about our feelings. Sometimes we need to push our feelings down so we can, like, just get through our day and then cry later. But, like,
are you relating to that lately, Emily?
I've been doing a lot of pushing my feelings down lately. But
you've also had some really good crying sessions.
That's true. I have. Yeah. But, like, I think that I've definitely gotten to this point in my life where, like, I know that the more I don't work to process the feelings, it's not going to go away. It's just going to come back later in other forms. And, like, I need to do that work. And so I think, like, really embracing good cries and, like, really embracing, like, therapy and, like, dealing with shitty emotions and, like, just sitting with how you feel that's shitty with, like, people who support you, not just, like, doing that on your own, because we are social human beings and we have to do it with other people. Like, I think I just think of, like,
the ways in which maybe Phoebe's mom could have had, like, more support instead of turning off the sad endings. Maybe if she watched the sad endings, she would have cried in front of her kids. Her kids would have wanted to know what's going on or something, and it would have prompted her to talk to people about how she's feeling or something like that. Obviously, not saying that watching the endings of sad movies will prevent you from committing suicide, but, like, I think that, you know, there's we need to talk about our feelings sometimes, and there's nothing wrong with talking about the shitty things.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm also, like, thinking, like, going, really reflecting on Phoebe's childhood, and then now, like, because I feel like we should transition over to the storyline with Ben, and it's just, like, I think that it's just, oh, I don't know. I'm just, like, I'm picturing little tiny Phoebe, and my heart goes to her for, not maybe being able to get the emotional support and that she needed from her caretakers. I remember at one point, like, I think it was around when Nora was, like, 1 year old, and Nora's our niece, if this is the first time you're tuning into our...
If this is
our
the
family discussion.
If this is the, like, 25th time you're tuning in, we talk about Nora literally every episode.
I just remember it was, like, around when she was 1 year old, and I remember kind of, like, having this moment of, like, looking at her and being like, oh my God, like, I can't imagine, like, any child around this age just, like you're just so dependent and, like, sensitive to, like, the stuff that's going on around you, and even though you can't express yourself, you know, like, like, you're just, like, you're just so at the whim of the people who are taking care of you. Like, I can't imagine any child that, like, doesn't deserve at this, I mean, at all points, but, like, just, like, having all the love in the world that you need to fill yourself. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It's just, like, this moment of, like, I don't know, maybe reflecting on all of those movies of, like, you know, where it's, like, there's, like, that classic, like, script of, like, the child left out in the bassinet, you know, in the rain, you know, and just, like, my whole heart collapsing at the thought of that for, like, any fragile little child.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, it's, like, it really makes you think of the episode where, like, when Ben is born, they're all stuck in the closet, like, Susan, Ross, and Phoebe. And this, like, moment where, like, Phoebe, like, laughs and is just, like,
yeah,
this is so great. Susan and Ross are just like, what the fuck are you talking about? And she's like, you know, I barely had enough, like, I barely had, you know, enough pieces of parents to make a whole one. Like, and here Ross is, here Ben is, or his baby is, he's not even born yet. And, like, you know, you two are, like, fighting over who gets to love him more. Yeah. And, like, that's just the most pure moment, I think, in all of Friends history. Like, I think that scene is just, like, amazing. And I think that it really shows here, right? Like, you have Phoebe, who, again, is, like, having to deal with the repercussions of, like, being alone as a kid. Mm-hmm. And, like, having to go through that emotional journey. And it's really explored in this episode as humorous and really funny when Phoebe's, like, fucking dealing with a huge thing here, you know?
Like, I do find it interesting because I feel like if these stories, like, and the show was developed now, I mean, there would be a lot of things different, obviously. But I also think that they possibly would have gone into Phoebe's life a little bit more seriously. Like, sometimes I feel like the jokes and how they try to approach Phoebe's life, like, I do think they're actually trying to do something with, like this episode, the episode at the hospital, like, they are trying to show the juxtaposition of, like, of Phoebe's life to, like, Ben's life, you know, like, and child rearing. And I feel like the way that they approach it, it still stays, like, very light and, like, sitcom-y. But I think that if this show was redone today, I think that they would have allowed for a little bit more of that, like, of, like, the maybe darker or, like, deeper side of it to kind of, like, seep through a little bit more to the audience.
And it's kind of sucky because they do demonstrate like the deeper sides of other people's feelings in the show. But I feel like Phoebe always kind of gets thrown to the wayside when it comes to her deeper feelings. Like, and like you have,
it's true. It's like, oh, we're allowed to have these deeper feelings, quote unquote, about like relationships and like breakups and, you know, like, but when it comes to like her life story, her origin story, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, no, totally. That's a good point.
Okay, favorite line in this episode, or one of the best lines in this episode in regards to this storyline, is when Phoebe very condescendingly says to Monica, he doesn't have rabies, he has babies.
Yeah, I know. Like, super like,
Like, Monica, clearly you don't understand. And then she goes, that's what my mom told me. It's rough.
What I love at the end of this storyline, which is like the very last like scene in this episode, is when Phoebe is holding Ben and they're watching the show together. And I just find it's like such a beautiful point of like it's almost like a demonstration of like, this is actually a more like a healthier way to teach children about hard things. It's not to not let them deal with hard things. It's about like, we're going to go through these hard things together and we're going to hold space for each other to feel hard things together. And I think it's such a cute thing where it's like, okay, Ben, I've looked ahead and it's going to end fine, but we're going to have some hard times together while, you know, Bert is looking for Ernie.
Yeah. For context, it is Sesame Street. And
it's so cute though.
Bert has buried, or Ernie has buried Bert in the sand and they are worried that they can't find him. Okay, cool. Yeah, so maybe we can use this to transition right into the Ben storyline. Mm-hmm. So tell me your, like, initial feels about the Ben storyline.
Oh my god, I have so many feelings about Ben's storyline. Like,
there's, like, two parts of it, right?
Yeah,
like, there's the part of, like, Ross not being able to be there for the raising of his child in the same way. And then there's, like, the Ross processing with Rachel, like how they both are looking towards their futures in different ways, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, I have a thought about this.
Go ahead.
I think that the reason why Ross has like basically planned his entire future with Rachel is because every moment that he misses something with Ben, and every time he misses a moment with Ben and like a life milestone with Ben, he keeps like thinking, okay, well, when I have my next child, it'll be different. And like, this is what it's going to be like with my next child.
Yeah.
And he's like imagining his future, and he's with Rachel. So he's imagining like a future in which he gets to be with his children all the time. And he doesn't have to like only see his child once a week. Like he gets to be with them and gets to witness these milestones. And that's why he's gone on this like journey of imagining his entire life with Rachel. It's because he's like thinking of round two. He's thinking of how his new situation or his future situation will be more ideal and less like, you know, only fractions and parts of witnessing his child growing up.
Yeah.
Which is fucking sad.
Yeah. It's interesting because like, this is the first time that they're showing how like, well, they're in very different spots in their lives. You know, like Ross has, you know, just started, you know, a co-parenting family and just got divorced, and he didn't want to be divorced, and he was so ready for his life to be like him in his little, you know, what's it called? Nuclear family. Nuclear family, you know, raising his children, and he was ready to like move off to the suburbs, and you know, and then you have Rachel, who is like in the opposite position, where like she just has moved away from having her entire life written out for her that was like beyond her control, and like really putting herself out on a limb and being like, no, I want to do this on my own and I want to choose my life for myself. And like, I feel like it's just, it was inevitable that like this was going to come to a point. And I feel like it's so interesting also because when they have these conversations, what's very common in like scripts around these conflicts is that you have like a woman who's like, I want you to settle down with me. And some dude that's like, I need to like
figure my shit out.
Figure myself out. Yeah. And
take 20 years to do it and use you as a parent as I figure myself out.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's definitely like a shift. And I also think like I really, even though they're like, you know, fighting in this kitchen, and I think that like, okay, two thoughts. First thought is that I think sometimes like we categorize fighting and yelling as like a bad thing in relationships. And I think that, you know, there's definitely better ways to communicate to people. But I think like in this moment, they're arguing and they're both really laying out what they need and what they're looking for and like what they expect and what their headspace is. And I think like at the end of this fight, they have communicated well.
Yeah.
Like it's actually an indication that they've expressed what they need and they did it well. And
yeah, my only my main critique of this situation is that you have a baby in the room. Do not be yelling at each other. Like, but like, whatever.
You know? I would argue that they're not like yelling. They're like raising their voices at each other.
I feel like it's an uncomfortable. Yeah. Anyway, whatever.
I just thought of something.
What?
You might have to cut it out though. Just remember when mom used to always say, "I didn't yell. I raised my voice." Like,
doesn't matter.
Yeah. Totally. But yeah.
But no, I do. What I actually find, again, going on, again, the flipping of the script that they did here in a kind of subtle way, where yeah. It's like you have instead now you have a woman who's like, you're being over committee. Mm-hmm. I love how she calls Ross out on like, where he's like, oh, well, I read this book and there was this name, Emily. And she's like, what was the name of the book, Ross? Like, she saw right through that shit.
A book of baby names.
Yeah. But what I find so interesting is that, like, they actually, like, it's a conflict. There is a difference. And they work through it. It's mm-hmm. fine. As opposed to, like, very often in other very typical mainstream scripts where it's reversed. Very often it's a dude who freaks out and then, like, is like, you're too clingy, and then runs away.
Yeah. You know? And they, like Rachel says that they've only been dating for 6 weeks.
Yeah. And, like, Ross is very intense. Yeah. Like,
it's the only thing is that like they've been dating for 6 weeks, but they've known each other for so long, and Ross has been in love with her for so long. So like, I bet you Ross has been imagining his future with Rachel even before they started dating, right? Like, and they also, but yeah. It's true. And like, they also only have been dating for 6 weeks, but they like pretty much confessed that they liked each other, like at the, you know, beginning of season two. And they only got together midway through season two. Like, you know, like there's a lot more history involved, right? And it's interesting because it's kind of like they're pulling at things that came up when Rachel was originally debating not dating Ross, was she was like, you know, Phoebe was like, it will be like, you know, being on the ninth date or whatever,
right.
The 12th date with someone. And like, that's a lot. You've already seen a lot. You've already been through a lot. And mm-hmm. So like, you're not just like casually dating. If you start dating, you're like intensely dating. Mm-hmm. And this like, this comes up and this is like, you know, it's explored here in this episode. But what
but also you can be on the 12th date with someone and not have your entire future written out. Like, this is also sure. Very specific to Ross and Ross's
yeah.
Situation. No matter what, it's very intense to like have someone, especially when you're in Rachel's position where it's like everything has been written out for her and like the point of her current life is like to not have that written out.
Yeah.
But it's very intense for Ross to be like, I don't know. Yeah. It's totally. It's like, it's one thing to think about it. It's one thing to like, but it's another to like write it out to the detail. Mm-hmm. But.
And they basically just conclude with like, you know, I'm not going to keep thinking of my future and you have to be okay with that. And, mm-hmm. you know, Ross being like, well, I am going to think of our future and you need to be okay with that.
Yeah.
And like, I think that, you know, I do think that this will cause later tension and they're going to have to navigate what that looks like. And we won't be privy to those conversations. But I think like, you know, it's an initial conversation about that. And it's an initial communication about what they need and you know, what they are. What they want the other person to know that they're expecting in this relationship. So
yeah, no, totally. It's a very interesting. Yeah, it's a very interesting portrayal of this very like common conflict in a relationship. Like, let's be real. This is like a fairly common difference in a relationship that you have to navigate.
People be on two different pages. Yeah. Okay.
Or not just two different pages, but different like future planning levels.
Yeah.
And like, I like how they demonstrate that it's like, just because like one person is ready to like, is like, I'm going to be with you forever. Mm-hmm. And the other person's like, I can't think past next month.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that it's like, oh, it's over.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really like the scene. I think that like the scene where they're fighting, where like, you know, they end up with being like, you know, because I love you. Well, I love you too. That's the first time we've ever said that to each other.
I'm going to kiss you now. Well, you.
That's great. I think that's really, really cute.
Yeah.
And then this storyline also, you know, explores, like we said, the feeling of Ross just kind of missing all these things with Ben, which is like kind of what leads him to, I think, start thinking about his future more, like we mentioned. But there's like a few moments in this storyline with Ross and Carol and Susan. And, you know, one of them is when Ross and Carol, when Susan and Carol are like explaining to Ross that Ben has already done something. Carol has this like really heartbreaking look on her face. Like you can see that she like really is like, I'm so sorry, Ross, that you're missing these things. And like, yeah, I think that that's like a really real, or I imagine is a very real thing with co-parenting, but even not even with co-parenting. Like when you have one parent who's like, who works all day and the other parent who's like a stay-at-home parent, you get to witness more of your child growing up. Yeah. And there's like pros and cons to that, you know, being alone with raising a child, especially in a pandemic, can be very intense for one parent while the other parent is working. But like, I think that, you know, the other parent does miss out on some things and does have to watch the video after and does maybe think that they're witnessing it for the first time, but actually they're not witnessing it for the first time. And there is something to be said about like how, you know, you do have to, you're not going to see every single moment in your child's life growing up. You just aren't, like, it's just not going to work that way. And having to manage that and cope with those feelings is like really, really big. I think, I think maybe why people have two children
and why people want grandchildren.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
But
talk about the end of this storyline. Like the
well, first of all, I really love how Rachel is then helping put on Ben's diaper.
Yeah.
And I love how she picks him up and just like, and it stays on and everything. That's great. I also, she like shakes him.
Yeah. Very gentle shake.
Like, gentle shake. No real baby shake. But just like, you know, bounces him a little to see if it'll stay. And I also want to point out that it's a reusable diaper.
Yeah.
Which is great. Which, by the way, if you didn't know, now they have, like, these services that you can use reusable diapers, where it's, like, they wash the diapers for you and then bring you the reusable diapers.
How expensive is that service, though?
I'm not sure. But diapers are expensive in the first place. And anyway, not the point. The point is that it's very cute because then I was going to say Jennifer Aniston, but then Rachel gets to hear Ben say a first word.
Yeah.
And I just think it's like really cute, like how suddenly now she's like involved in it all. Ross is very disappointed, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's just this heart melting moment of like when Carol and Susan come pick him up, he ends up saying bye. Ben says bye to Ross. And it's just like,
yeah.
You just have this beautiful little interaction, and I love, like, again, like, David Schwimmer.
His
like,
acting is...
I just, yeah. like, he acts, like, not, I would say not even just from his whole body, but, like, from the inside out.
Yeah.
You know? And it's just, like...
And, like, Ben says bye, and he just kind of does this, like, hop, and he's like, he said bye to me! He said bye to me! Like, he's like a child. He's so happy. Like, he's just, like... overflowing with joy, and it's like so fucking cute. Like this scene hands down always makes me like teary and like
yeah, you can just like, you can feel his whole heart warming and like getting bigger and fuller, and just like the love and the connection there. It's just, it's a really beautiful moment. I love it so much.
I just realized like this whole episode I don't shit on Ross. Like,
and
that's why people are complex. And, like, I just really love this moment with Ross. And I think, yeah. like, you know, Ross and Rachel's relationship is really, like, later down the line moves towards some sketchy territory. Started off on a few sketchy moments, too. And I think, like, this...
This is, like, Ross's prime time.
Because Ross...
Like, this is, like...
Prime
prime Ross. But, yeah, it's...
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Totally. And then, okay, I want to talk about, like, another thing that happens. I know we still have to talk about the Monica thing, but there's this moment with when Carol and Susan drop Ben off with Ross. Carol and Susan are leaving, and, you know, they're like, okay, bye, Ben, bye. And Ross, like, takes Ben's hand and makes Ben, like, wave.
Yeah.
And he, like, says, bye, Mommy, to Carol. But then he turns to Susan, and it's, like, subtle, and if you, like... I've watched this episode so many times, and this is the first time I noticed it. Mm-hmm. But, like, he says, bye, Mommy, to Carol, and then he looks to Susan, and he makes Ben wave and go, like, bye, Mommy, to Susan. And, like, there's just been, since the beginning of Susan's introduction and the introduction of, like, Carol being pregnant, there's just been this, like, super intense animosity between Ross and Susan,
mm-hmm.
and like Ross being like, no, I'm the secondary caregiver, or like whatever it is, you know, and
secondary caregiver. Sorry, it's too good.
And like this acknowledgement basically of Susan as a parent, which like I know sounds like a low bar, but like it's important, I think, and relevant in this moment. Okay.
I feel like there was something else I wanted to cover on this, but I forget. So we can just move on.
Okay, cool. Let's talk about Chandler and Joey and Richard and Monica.
Yeah, there's some great stuff here. Okay, I want to point out here again, there's like a parenting theme here. There's like a parent-child relationship theme.
Oh yeah, with like the boys, Joey and Chandler like feeling like their dads weren't ever as cool.
Yeah, and then like having a relationship with Richard, we find out that it's like more centered around them like trying to have like a parent,
yeah,
like kid relationship,
mm-hmm.
which is, I don't know, it's just interesting. There's like a definitely like an ongoing theme here.
Parenthood. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So obviously they go to like the Knicks game and there's this like, they end up basically going from, like, not really wanting to hang out with him because he's old to, like,
admiring really him.
Admiring and, like, imitating him and, like, wanting to be him, basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What are your feelings on, like, maybe we should talk about it also in, like, two different ways. Like, the Monica navigating this and, like, the like, Chandler and Joey kind of with Richard father dynamics things.
Right.
I don't know if, like, I think there's, like, a lot to be said in terms of, like, the intergenerational relationships. Like, I think that it is interesting to think of, like, your best friend or one of your best friends dating someone who's, like, 20 years older than you. Like, how do you develop a relationship with them? Like, is it inevitable that it would turn into, like, a dad-like relationship? But, like... It kind of depends on how Richard presents himself in the group. Like, I imagine that would be an interesting dynamic to navigate, you know?
Yeah, no. Yeah, it's interesting. But earlier you were kind of like, would that change the dynamic of the group? And part of me is just like, they're just such a cliquey group that
right.
I would have a hard time seeing things changing much. But yeah, it would be interesting having someone... new.
Do you think Monica ever like is embarrassed by the immaturity of her children and feels like she of her children?
That, my friends, is a Freudian slip.
Chandler and Joey, and like feels like she has to pretend that she's more mature. Like I imagine
to overcompensate kind of thing.
Yeah, like I imagine that there would be some sort of dynamic in which like Monica has to like, I don't know, like, demonstrate that she is an adult. She's, like, adulting.
I don't know. I feel like there's never any question that Monica is adulting. Like,
Right.
I think that, like, she's, if anything, like, what was it? Was it, did we already do the episode where she, the bed fixing? No, not yet,
I don't remember.
Anyway, in, like, if anything, I think that her intensity to be, like, clean and organized, like, yeah. if anything, she generally tries to downplay that because she's, like, overly,
right,
like, she intimidates people by that, you know?
Yeah. But, like, at this point, like, she doesn't have a job right now.
Yeah,
right?
I know. I find that interesting that, like, it's not really addressed at this point.
Yeah.
But, like, it's interesting because, like, that's never seems to be an issue with her and Richard. Like, I will say that, totally. Like, their relationship just seems to be, like, quite genuinely
lovely and mutual respect.
And, yeah, mutual respect and just, like, easy for them. And, like, yeah. like they just fit really well. And, like... Yeah.
But I do, like, I do think that part of me, and maybe I've just, like, never really thought about this that much, but, like, part of me imagines that, like, this does kind, like, the portrayal of their relationship isn't actually that realistic in terms of, like, I do think the fact that, like, they have a 21-year age difference, like, would get in the way when it comes to, like, larger conversations about, like, you know, who you are as a person, where your life is going, and things like that. And, like, I know that's explored later, and we're not going to talk about that right now, but, like, I think that, I don't know, I think that, like, I imagine that it would come up sooner rather than later. Like, this, like, he hangs out with her friends, does she hang out with his friends? How do his friends deal with the fact that their friend is dating someone who's 20 years younger? Like, what does that dynamic look like, you know? And, like, do they, I don't know, like, I guess I just imagine that it's quite different. Like, Richard is gonna retire in a few years, you know? Like, Monica's barely getting taken off in her career at this point, you know? Like, mm-hmm. it's just completely different stages in your life. And that's not to say, like, I'm a firm believer in the fact that, like, you know, love has no age or whatever you say, you know, I don't think that, like, I think love transcends that, but, you know, relationships are more than just love. There's logistics. And there's, like,
love and logistics equals relationship.
Love, logistics, and, like, being on the same page about things. And, like, yeah. And so I just imagine that, like, I don't know, it could be difficult to, like, maybe even just, like, witness your friend be in a relationship with someone who's 20 years older and, like, you know, resist asking the question, like, what are you going to do in 5 years? You know, like, is this a long-term relationship? Like, you seem to really be into this person. Is it sustainable? Like, it's just, like, I imagine that as a friend witnessing that, it would be, like, you wouldn't really know how to ask questions or like, go into that. I don't know. This is kind of a tangent, but I was just thinking of that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean... I guess, like, okay, I know that there's, like, a certain amount of, like, logistics and, but, like, those things are explored later down the line. I don't want to go into them all that much. Like, mm-hmm. but I also think that we tend to, like, bristle away from this, like, concept of intergenerational friendships and relationships. Like, just, like, let's just, like, talk about, like, general relationships. I'm not talking about, like, committed romantic relationships. Yeah. Because, it, like, yeah, there are, like, layers that can be explored to, like, the complications of mm-hmm. stuff like that. But, like, I guess, like, at the end of the storyline, what really comes out of it for me is, like, why is it a bad thing that, like, Joey and Chandler...
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
Like... see him kind of as a dad, like a father figure. Yeah. Like, first of all, he is a dad.
Yeah.
You know, like, and, like, you can...
He's a grandfather, in fact.
Yeah, he's a grandfather.
Yeah.
And it's just, he... You know, like, you can hang out with your kids in a hang-out type of way. You know, like,
yeah.
And... even if they're not actually your kids, but people who sort of see you as a bit more of a fatherly figure,
yeah.
like, is there less value in it?
But I do think that the way that we portray relationships like that is that there is an additional power dynamic. And it's like one person, like, I wonder if to Richard, it means that, like, he is now being looked up to. He is now being admired. Can he not turn to them for support? Can he not turn to them about, you know, can he not develop a deeper emotional relationship? Or is it just like he is now in this position where he's supporting them because he's the dad in the relationship? Like, does it mean that they aren't equals in the sense of like emotional support? Whereas like in a dad relationship, there is a dynamic that one person is a caregiver, right? And so does that change the way that they communicate with each other and form a relationship? And I think that that does. I think that that would inherently affect the way that they communicate to each other and grow as a relationship. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's just a different thing. And if Richard was entering their friendship expecting it to look a different way, then that could throw you off.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. I guess I just feel like it's too, I don't know. It just feels like, oh, you think of me as a dad and then like throwing in your hat, you know, kind of thing. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. It's
maybe he threw in the hat for now. And
yeah,
who knows?
I mean, at the end of the day, they're all going to be hanging out with each other.
Yeah,
exactly. It's hard to escape each other. Mm-hmm. So something I actually wanted to bring up here, though, is that Joey is the one in this episode that like makes all of like the social mistakes, essentially. Like he says all the wrong things, which is interesting because like it's sort of like almost like the hierarchy of Joey's character. They've made it is that like he's the one that says things that are considered dumb, essentially. And then I really hate that word, stupid. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. It's like all those words. I'm not like super, but like that is, you know, and then like the other aspect of him is that he's actually probably the most socially aware of like, especially all like the dudes in the group, you know, like when it comes to like how, but I don't know, just in general, he's like very good at like navigating relationships and like friendships and like how you're supposed to support each other and yada yada. And so I just find it kind of strange that in this storyline, like he's the one that says all the wrong things, and including like he was completely
oblivious
to the idea that like, oh, like maybe this thing could be upsetting to Richard to say it out loud. I don't know.
But maybe it's not obliviousness. Maybe it's like him just not actually thinking it's a bad thing if they look up to him as a dad and like feeling that that's a good relationship dynamic and he wants that kind of relationship dynamic. And then as he says it, only then realizing that maybe Richard doesn't want that relationship dynamic, you know?
You're not a dad. Also, what's great about the end of that scene in the DVD version, Joey and Chandler, like, they hit each other in the regular, like...
In the streaming version.
But then in the DVD version, they get into a bit of, like, a slap each other fight, and then they chase each other out of the room. Which just, like, really drives home, like, the age difference, I think.
I can't believe you got us into trouble. Yeah, and then... Like, at the same time, we didn't really talk about it yet, but, like, there's a few lines in which Monica is clearly trying to navigate the fact that, like, her partner is becoming friends with her.
Yeah.
With her friends, which, like, you know, I think that it's like, a very real feeling where you're, like, you really want your friends to get along with your partner, but then, like, you also don't want their relationship to detract or take away from the time that you get to spend with your partner. Because like,
but I have dibs, right?
Yeah, like, because it starts with her wanting them to hang out with it, her wanting them to hang out with him, and like this, you know, like, come on, it's great, it, like, you should be friends with him. And then that dynamic becoming like more and more, and them hanging out more and more, and her just being like, well, like, I don't actually really want this all the time. I just want you guys to be friends. I don't want you to like take away from my time with Richard, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I find that, yeah, I find that interesting. And yeah, I think it's very real. And I think that Monica has a lot of self-awareness in this moment of just being like, you know, I don't want to be that type of, like, she literally has the line of like, I don't want to be the kind of girlfriend who like wants her boyfriend to hang out with her all the time. But, like, he doesn't have very much time to hang out with me, and I do want that time with him.
Also, it's such a great scene. Like we were pointing out that in that scene, it's just, it actually ends up being just this long scene, the way they set up the script. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like Phoebe comes in, she complains, and then Richard leaves, and then And then
you see
Monica,
all three storylines.
Yeah, they all cross over in this in this scene. And like Monica then turns to is frustrated with Richard leaving. She doesn't understand why. And she, I want to point out that her self-awareness in this situation and trying to seek out support.
Yeah.
Like A plus plus Monica.
Yeah.
We're going to be able to contrast that in future. But like, she like turns to Phoebe and wants support and is sort of like, what is like, wants to talk it out with Phoebe. And then obviously Phoebe is dealing with her own shit and like is incapable. Mm-hmm. And then Rachel comes in and Monica is like wanting to like, it's like, great. Other person that I can get support from. But then Rachel is like in the midst of being like, everything's being planned out. And I love how Monica is just like, I'm gonna go read Cosmo.
Which is not notorious for having great relationship advice.
But I love like the last ditch effort. But I do really love Monica's like the overt like self-awareness in her discomfort of the situation, trying to like figure it out and like seek out support. It's funny because it's never followed up because she never has to actually really figure it out.
But she'll deal with it down the line one day, I'm sure. Okay, maybe you'll get mad at me for making this transition, but I'm going to do it anyways. Who do you think is the best friend of the episode?
No, I think that's a great transition. I think the best friend of the episode... Oh man, I actually didn't even think of this beforehand. Did you?
I was thinking about it just now and like, I think it's kind of hard to say. Like,
there was a lot of good friending in this episode.
I don't know about like good friending. I think there's like a lot of like conversations. I don't know. Like, there's some, I don't think that they're all there to support each other in the same way. Like, I don't know.
It's, like, I really,
like, they're kind of all dealing with their own shit on their own.
Yeah, that's true.
If you think about it. Like, no one really offers anyone any advice.
Yeah.
Like if
Phoebe's
anything,
kind of like on her own.
If anything, Monica's like the one that's trying to support Phoebe through watching these episodes. And like, then when she turns to to Phoebe for support in return, Phoebe kind of is just dealing with her own shit. So
she's
can't
too
support
deep.
Her.
She's too deep.
So like, I would say Monica's a good contender.
Yeah. Like being a good friend is also like asking for help and like seeking out. Like, it's not just waiting for it to come to you.
I get it, Quinn. I get it.
I didn't mean for that to be pointed, but it
I was complaining to Quinn the other day about how it was very petty, but I was just complaining about how not enough of my friends ask me how I'm doing.
I also want to talk about, I want to point out that you also first got upset with me for how often I ask you how you're feeling. You're like, but really, I'm just angry because no one else is asking me how
I'm going through a lot and not enough people are checking in on me and it's only you.
So really, I can't win no matter what.
So really, if you're my friend who and you're listening to this episode, please reach out to me. I'm having a hard time. I'm gonna have strangers now messaging me. Now. Anyways.
Anywho.
So Monica.
Oh yeah, I vote Monica for sure.
Yeah, same. I say Monica. I also think that like in terms of like communication, which I think is integral to friendship, I think like Rachel and Ross should get like second prize as like friendship, like for friends, best friend of the episode, in the sense that like they're communicating their feelings well, and that is integral to maintaining friendships.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Totally.
Okay, great.
So how do we want to do this? Because I want to do like the
spoiler zone
segment.
Okay, so thank you so much for listening to the episode. We would love to know how you feel about this episode. You know, this change of format. Obviously, it's a little bit different, but I think I really liked it this way. Maybe we'll start to gain some more structure in the future, but let us know your thoughts. We have decided to start introducing a segment in which we have spoiler-full conversations.
It's called the Spoily Zone.
Sure. So we are going to transition into that portion right now. So if you are a Patreon subscriber, you will be able to get access to this spoiler full section of the episode. It'll be in a separate private RSS feed for you to listen to. So it'll be the extended version of this episode.
Or just post it up on our Patreon feed as well. So
yeah,
like
you can listen to it on Patreon
like on
too.
The private side of it.
So If you're not already a Patreon supporter and you want to be included in our spoilies zones episodes, then you should head over to our Patreon and become a subscriber. For all our patrons, keep listening because we're about to get into some spoilers. For everyone else, keep deconstructing
and diversifying
the media you consume.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of What the Phalange. If you're picking up what we're putting down, please consider supporting us on Patreon, leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts, and or sharing us with all of your friends on social media.
You can find us at whatthephalangepodcast.com, email us at wtphalange@gmail.com, DM us on Twitter at wtphalangepod, or follow us on Instagram at wtphalangepodcast. All links will be included in the show notes below.
Want to get in touch with us each individually? You can find Emily on Twitter as EmilyB__, and that's Emily with an IE.
And you can find Quinn at TheBasicNB on Instagram. Keep deconstructing
and diversifying
the media you consume.